That music can mean only one thing. Alvin and Lawrence U. Bell are here, the gurus of how to. Alvin Larry Bell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. You have any other names? don't tell me. Don't tell me. This is a family show.
Well, for those who want to litigate, it's U. Bell Enterprises. okay.
A.K.A. DBA. Anyway, when the U. Bells visit us, we take your calls on all sorts of home repair matters, and it gets fairly wide-ranging, as we've discovered over the years. There are a lot of people out there with real problems.
Yes.
And I hope we've saved a couple of them a lot of money, and I think in some cases probably even saved a few lives.
Well, I'll tell you something. You know, this week I'm experiencing something. I'm trying to explain the way a high-rise building functions, buildings that are over 20 stories or so. And people don't realize that when it goes up very high, these tall buildings, they're actually are sometimes two and three and four buildings, one on top of another. And each 29 stories or 27 stories acts independently of the other sections of the building. It's a very difficult concept to show a lawyer or somebody who is literal and has no mechanical.
So you have to duplicate.
Well, actually,
the mechanisms at each stage.
Exactly, it's a mechanical thing, not a structural thing. As a structural thing, it's one entity.
Yes, mm-hmm.
As a structural thing, but and that's not.
But you mean like water supply, heating,
HVAC or heating, ventilation and air conditioning. You don't want to have one heating plant because the heating plant will be so far away from where you're putting the heat, and you get so much loss that it's easy. That if you look at high-rise buildings, you'll see every 20 or so floors, there's a floor that has no windows or just has a bunch of grills all the way around.
And that's the basement for the building above.
Exactly.
The basement is all the way upstairs.
So when you're trying to describe that to someone who thinks that their concept of a building is the home they grew up with the boiler in the basement, whether it's two or three or four stories, it's very simple. Well, it doesn't pay to do that for a high-rise building.
And there's also another aspect.
So the Empire State Building has how many buildings?
There's about maybe five. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But the point is that another factor is that if you had a water tank on the roof to feed all the water down below, the water down below would be, if it was the whole building in one entity, it would be like 150 pounds of pressure. And that's almost unusable to somebody who's flushing the toilet. Water would blow right out. So they have to have pressure regulators at each level or even storage tanks at each level in order to supply the water. And also having something fall, say, 100 or 50, 75 stories in a waistline, it would break the pipes if you had something in the pipe. So you have to have a way to capture each drop of gravity to bring it to another level and bring it down gently into the sewer system.
So I've never thought of this before.
It's very more complicated than people believe.
You learn a new thing every day.
And you know what else I learn? I learn the answer to the quiz that you bring along with you.
Nice segue. He is a professional.
I play one on television. I'm a paraprofessional, actually, normally. I'm going to read the quiz this time. That way I eliminate the whole dynamic between father and son here.
But isn't that the whole reason you have us here?
I think the reason we have you on the show is because you give good information, like what I just learned about the skyscrapers or tall buildings, high rises, anyway, things that I never knew. You know, I'm going to bore people with that for the rest of my life. You see that space there
that
on
line?
The building? That's where the second basement is. Oh, and there's the third. Okay, anyway, here's today's quiz.
I can imagine your friends going, that's very nice. Right, very nice, Leonard.
Leonard, you told us that already. 212-433-9692 is our number if you have any questions for the gurus of how to, or if you have an answer to this quiz, which is, these two words are part of screw and nut terminology and was invented by Archimedes. Every screw has an outer and inner portion to the thread, similar to mountains and valleys. What is the outer high point called, and what is the inner low point called? They're two different words, and we will be giving away two books.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if somebody only gets one, that's okay?
Yes. Right.
But what happens if somebody knows both?
They get two books.
They get two books?
Well, they would get two books.
They would get two books.
Okay, and I suggest when you start thinking about calling in, you might also think about special problems from winter, because we, although this has been an odd winter, no snow,
and the
warmest day
snow.
Of the year.
We had light.
Yeah,
but it's also.
Did you have to shovel?
No, because I waited 2 minutes.
Every January that I've been on this show, from the get go, we always tell people about the Christmas tree problem.
Want to do that again?
And people, according to the statistics, this Christmas that we had here, almost over 160,000 trees or bushes were brought into people's homes throughout the city. And by this time, most of the people should have gotten rid of them. They really should have gotten rid of them right now, because that's a fire hazard.
As they get brittle and
they
dry.
They dry out. And the slightest little spark, or if you have electrical things, and the spark that could come from even static electricity could start a major fire in your house.
A matter of fact, I was just speaking with two of my friends, both Joni and Liz, both have their trees still up. Get them out. They've been there way too long, and they're dried out. Even if you have water at the bottom, the tree stops sucking up the water.
The capillary action and or whatever mechanism brings the water up ceases to, like, you put a rose in the water, the rose still dies after a while.
Exactly.
And the same thing with a tree.
It's not a plant.
And the city has provided in 85 city parks throughout the city, the five boroughs, to bring this trees to the parks, and you can call 311 and they can tell you where the park closest to you is. And this is also part of the annual mulch fest that we're going to use all that to grow another million trees throughout the city.
What happens when you just leave it in front of the building? The sanitation department comes by, picks it up, but do they use it for mulch?
Well, there is a special pickup, and I'm not sure when it was because I don't have a tree, so it's not one of those things that really concerns me. But there is a period of time I was listening to the radio, the news on television, and there's a special day where they came pick it up. I don't know if that day already came and went.
Probably did.
Yes.
Because we're always behind the times here.
But 311, you can get all that information.
But the most important is we're bringing it up right now as a safety issue, not necessarily as an environmental issue.
And I'm going to bring up an ID right now. This is the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC and WNYC.org. With me are the gurus of how to, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Robert from Brooklyn, on the air.
Hi, Bob.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Okay, now, I have a one-family house with a flat roof. Now, I know when you have the old tar paper, when it bubbles up, you got to cut it and patch it.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago, I hired a roofer, put in the new rubberized roof. Now, I got a couple of small little bubbles. So here's the question. My gut feeling tells me just leave it alone. If I cut it, how do I do it?
Well, you want to take this or?
Sure, I'd love to talk occasionally. Anyway, first of all, is your roof painted with aluminum asphalt paint, or does it have a gravel finish?
It's got the shiny aluminum.
Yeah, so he painted it afterwards, right?
Yeah.
That's a good thing. It depends on, you got to feel the bubble with your hand. Hopefully it's not a water blister and it's an air blister.
No water, it's air, but they're just a couple of small ones.
When you say small, how many inches across?
Wide, a few inches wide, 6 inches long. I mean, small.
Small. I would leave it alone for now.
Yeah.
Okay, but if you do patch it, you could patch it with another piece of modified bituminous. And you get a piece that's almost, I would say, at least 6 to 8 inches wider than the patch itself. You slash it, put it down, and then warm that up. And actually, they don't want you using torches on roofs anymore, but electric heat guns will also work for this particular application.
Thank you so much for calling us. Shira from Bergen County, New Jersey.
Hi, Shira.
Hi, I love your show, and I love this segment.
Oh, then we love you, too. I feel the love.
I just moved to the suburbs, and I'm discovering all the things that come along with owning. And I wondered why everyone covers their central air conditioning things in their backyards during the winter.
I'm going to take this one, too, is I don't know either. These devices are meant to be outside. If you look at all the buildings, all the commercial buildings, all the stuff is left outside. What I would like to see you do is get either a piece of plexiglass or a piece of plywood with a few bricks and sit it on top of the air conditioning unit to stop the leaves from falling inside of it over the off season. But covering it all with plastic just causes corrosion because the moisture gets caught inside and has nowhere to go. It's kind of like when you go swimming with a watch and you can never get all that moisture out again.
Right.
So I just want you to stop stuff from going in time. I don't want you to use plastic on top, like plastic wrap, because, again, that will trap moisture. Just a piece of plywood with a couple of bricks. Won't look the prettiest.
A temporary roof.
Exactly, and it will be very effective.
Okay?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And actually, that's the cheapest way, right?
Cheap, less work, and the work that I see people have to go through to take the wrap off.
Well, I've seen something that somebody had a piece of plywood on top, and they had a couple of shock cords just to hold it down.
That would be good,
too. So it doesn't get blown away.
Shock cords would work better, but if you're going to do the shock cords, don't get the ones with the cloth on the outside. Get the ones that are all rubber.
That's true.
David, hi. David, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing? I have a terracotta tile in my walkway, and I put a mat down there, and the tar, I guess, stuck to the top of it. And I tried detergent, I tried Goof Off, but I can't seem to get it off, you know?
Are you talking about tar?
Yeah, it's like a tar.
He has tar on the terracotta tile.
Terracotta, the only thing that you can, once, if it is an unglazed terracotta, it's probably sucked into the terracotta itself. However, to remove the terracotta, tar or asphalt, the best best thing you could use is probably gasoline.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Dennis from Somerset, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I have a one-story house, and I have any problem with toilets getting clogged periodically, once or twice a month, and I need to plunge them out. I know you don't recommend snaking them out.
No, we don't.
What's a good thing to do to...
I need to ask you a question first. How old are these toilets?
The house is 15 years old, so...
So the toilets are relatively old, actually.
Right. I guess so, yeah.
Well, actually, 20-year-old toilet. Actually, a 20-year-old toilet's not that old. What they've done is, I think this has happened about 20 or some odd years ago, is they reduced the orifice size on the bottom of the toilets because they rather the blockage occur in the toilet than happen in the pipe. So I think what you have to do, and I've learned this in my house, is you got to really reduce the amount of paper that you use for each flush. And so that might help. But if you find that the blockage is actually in the pipe itself, then I think that your problem is not so much that snaking or plunging, is that there's something in the pipe itself, which is catching the paper and causing this blockage.
What about Drano or something like that? Isn't that supposed to break down the thing that's blocking it?
The problem I have with Drano and all those other ones is that it really does deteriorate the pipes.
Well, it does, but the blockage that he is describing usually comes by a sharp bend. In other words, or the lead bend that comes off of the toilet bowl. If it's too much of a right angle, or sometimes it's even greater than a right angle. Sometimes it goes to 100 degrees. It goes down and comes slightly up.
Because if the floor settled and the pipe didn't,
yes.
an 85 or an 80-degree angle.
You get a kink in the pipe, and that becomes a blockage. So sometimes you have to almost take the toilet bowl off and take your hand and look down on the inside and see.
Wear
if
a rubber glove.
Yeah, you take your hand and do it.
But let me just explain.
You want to know something? If you're going to work with plumbing, and you're going to have to accept that kind of...
Well, let me also say one other thing. That people say the lead bend. Why is there lead there? The reason that they put lead in this... Well, the connection between the flange, which sits on the floor, and the pipe that connects to the cast iron or PVC or copper, whatever the house piping system is was made of lead for many, many, many years, because as the floor would rise up and down, the lead would bend with it, so it wouldn't crack.
It would act like an expansion joint.
But what I've seen in many of my inspections is that over time of the floor settling, this lead tends to kink up.
Yes.
And it causes a lot of sharp edges inside, which is places for stuff to get caught. You may end up having to put in a whole new lead bend there if this problem is constantly happening.
Thank you so much for calling us. We go now to Barbara from Brooklyn. Hi, Barbara. You're on
and
the air.
Before we get to Barbara, thing why Alvin and myself don't like people using snakes in toilets is you're basically using this piece of metal that you're hanging away at basically a piece of vitreous china. This is what your toilet's made of. Is no different than what you're
going to scratch it.
Scratch it. You crack it in half.
You crack it. You crack it, you scratch it, and if you scratch it, there's always going to be dirt lines in it. Whatever you do, do not, under any circumstance, use steel wool or any kind of abrasive material inside of a toilet bowl, because you really will ruin that toilet bowl.
This toilet bowl has a structural strength of your dinner plates. Mm. Okay? Go on.
Barbara.
Hi, I really enjoy this segment as well.
Mm-hmm.
I own a single-family home in Brooklyn, an attached house built in the 20s that has 1.5 baths.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to add a stall shower in my basement, and I had a plumber come and look at it, and he basically said it's not a legal thing to do, or I could have problems down the line selling the home.
That is exactly
That's true.
Because it depends also on the height level of the street compared to your basement, if it's actually a basement or a cellar. Cellars are lower into the ground than basements.
And also you may exceed the livable space ratio for mm-hmm. that particular building in the zoning area that you happen to live in. There's a whole host of rules and regulations, and also it is not permissible to have a livable space in a cellar area. And mm-hmm. I don't know whether your lower level is either a cellar or a basement. And that's a little bit technical the way it comes
in. But the other thing we want to say is that in most cases, when a builder builds a building, whether it's today or it was 100 years ago, they try to get as much space out of the building as possible. And if the reason that your cellar or your basement is rough is because they couldn't develop it.
Yeah, well, you know, I kind of have finished it, and I do have windows, so it's not really deep in the ground.
You might
so
want to
basically, I can't do it.
I'm not going to answer that question because I'm not at your house, but you should contact an architect, and architects are the guys and women, sorry, men and women, who can do that kind of calculation for you.
We thank you so much for your call, and we're going to take a little break and come back with more and some people who have answers to the quiz. Mm-hmm. Our number here is 212-433-9692. My guests are the gurus of How To, Alvin and Lawrence U. Bell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. And we're back with the Gurus of How To, Alvin and Lawrence U. Bell, the Gurus of How To, and also Brooklyn, Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn. I don't know. I always say that, but it sounds
well, that's
clunky.
Where we are. Oh. We're in the shadow of the Verrazano Bridge, and we're really in a great area of Brooklyn. You look down the street, and you'll see Lower New York Bay. It's a great place to have an office.
Meanwhile, we have this quiz, and I'm going to read it again, and then we're going to see if anybody's got it right. The two words that are part of a screw and nut terminology invented by Archimedes. Every screw has an outer and inner portion to the thread, similar to mountains and valleys of the thread. What's the outer high point called, and what is the inner low point called? And Steve, calling from an ambulance? Steve,
yes.
I hope you're not one of the patient.
No. We're just waiting for our next call right now.
Okay. What do you say it is?
The pitch and the diameter.
No.
Sorry.
No, but what he said, the pitch is the difference, the distance between these things that we're asking.
The difference between the mountains and the valleys.
Yes.
That's the pitch.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Now we go to Mark from Huntington. Hi, Mark. What do you say it is?
I say the crest and the root.
And as we always ask, how did you know this?
Well, I was a student at Brooklyn Tech High School years and years ago.
And they made you draw this.
And yes, I did, and we cared about terminology like that.
Excellent. And you remembered. That's the good thing, that so you actually went to Brooklyn Tech and remembered what they taught you.
And now it pays off, and now you get two. Save Money, Save Energy by Al Ubell and George Merlis.
And you can give the other one out to someone else as a present, and maybe they, too, will save energy and save money.
And if you know who you're giving it to, give them the two names that you want us to autograph it to.
Okay. Thank you.
Hold on.
Thank you. Now, we're going to put you on hold, and one of my producers will take your name and address, okay?
Okay.
And we also get these comments from listeners. They write in, and I'll throw one at you now.
Mm-hmm.
Are attic fans generally necessary, or will soft gable and is it soft?
It's soffit.
Soffit gable and ridge vents be enough to prevent mold?
Yes. Normally, yes. I have a whole house fan and an attic fan. to get the air moving, because when the building gets very hot, it's a good way to create a negative pressure through the building and cool the building off, especially when the outside temperature is really not that hot, but your home is heated up from the day of the sun and stagnant air. It's a good way to cool it off. But no, if soffit vents, ridge vents, and gable vents are put in properly, no mold should be growing in your attic space.
Yeah, because there's like almost like an air current, like a vector. Mm-hmm. When the air inside the attic gets warm, it rises to the ridge, and if there are good ridge vents, it just goes right out of the air, and fresh air comes in from the soffits.
And also, if you do see mold in it, in your attic
space. As another person asked, how important is it to remove black mold?
Oh, go look at that. I was way ahead of you there. It's not so important to remove the mold. It's important to figure out why you have the mold. And that's really what's important. If you're having mold in your attic space, something is really bad.
Yeah, what's happening is probably a bathroom vent has terminated in the attic space.
And you see that all the time.
Or a bathroom ventilator is ventilating the shower area right into the attic area. All of those ventilators should be outside of the building, not inside that attic area.
Do they just build them into the attic area?
They put it through and the pipes just laying there.
Yeah, and the plumbers sometimes say, I don't want to cut a hole in the roof, I'll cause a leak and I'm getting out of here. And the problem is that when you have a bathroom or a sanitary vent in your attic, what's coming out of that vent stack is bacteria and protozoa, because you have sewage gases coming into the attic space. So that's one of the causes of mold in attic spaces.
I went to high school with that guy, Eugene Protozoa.
John from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I live in a top floor of a loft that's been converted from a factory.
How many floors?
Five.
Thank you.
And the drainage pipe from the roof passes through my apartment. And when I have the heat on and it's raining outside, it's cold outside, the water running through the pipe, I get condensation and even like raindrops.
Well, that's really easy to control. What you have to do is that the first thing is if you have to get access to that drain that comes down, and then wrap it with insulation. They have what they call pressure-sensitive insulation that can go all the way around it, and on the outside it has a vapor barrier, and so that condensation will not form. It'll prevent the condensation from touching the pipe because the pipe is cold, it reaches the dew point, and any moisture in the atmosphere will condense on that pipe. So if you insulate it with a vapor barrier, that condensation will cease.
Okay.
And how would you finish that with sheetrock around it?
No, you don't have to.
Well, no, he doesn't want to actually look at the pipe.
Oh.
So once you
can you make this attractive?
No, I don't. I want to put the minimum amount over. I don't want to just.
Oh, in that case, and they make that kind of insulation They make
Owens
it also
Corning
fiberglass.
Makes it.
Yeah, you can just wrap it with this insulation, do a really nice, neat job. They give you the tapes and everything to do it, and it would look really nice, and it would probably stop that from happening.
Where are you located? In Brooklyn or whereabouts?
Brooklyn.
Well, if you go into Bruce Plumbing or any big plumbing supply house, you just tell them what the diameter of that pipe is, and they will give you insulation that forms right around that pipe, and you just pull off the tape, and it sticks wonderfully, and you can even paint it afterwards.
Thank you for calling us, John. Gary, also from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Gary.
Yeah, hi. I've got a brownstone with, I guess, what is kind of a standard setup, a skylight in the stairwell.
Right.
And to allow the light to come in from the roof, of course, the plaster ceiling's got a kind of an oval hole cut.
Right, yeah.
So I had this bright idea of during the wintertime of kind of climbing up into that crawl space between the ceiling and the roof and covering that oval hole with a sheet of glass to kind of prevent cold air from escaping. But then I started to think, you know, am I going to create some other problem?
No, actually, that oval hole probably had a nice piece of stained glass in it originally, which is way gone now.
Right.
Most of them do, and they're very attractive. Yes, Adam.
But I also got to be very careful if you try to crawl into that place.
Right.
That's called the cock loft, by the way.
Or roof cavity.
And a roof cavity, and they are not structurally very strong to hold a person crawling through that space. So you got to be very careful how you move around.
That ceiling of the top floor of a brownstone is actually Like all the other floor, the ceilings are the other side of the floor.
Right.
In the roof cavity, it's hung from the roof rafters.
With little sticks.
With little sticks. If you look in there, it's like maybe sometimes they're just the same sticks they use for the plaster lath. We're talking about quarter inch wide by maybe an inch and a half thick.
And by this time, the rust, the nails are all corroded away.
And so, or it's just little sticks. Or,
I don't want to even live on the top floor then.
So be real careful when crawling around in there. But yes, putting a piece of glass up there would be great. And there are probably even vendors who will actually design a piece of attractive glass for that.
Thank you so much for calling. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lope with the Gurus of How To, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell. We're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Steve from Manhattan, a former client of yours, Larry, I understand. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Leonard. Hi, Larry.
Hi.
Larry, you inspected my house up in Kingston, that flat roof.
Oh, how are you?
I'm very good, and I'm sorry to be calling. It has nothing to do with you, by the way.
Thank God.
There was a rubber membrane on the roof. And
right.
If you recall, the roof is constructed of these plywood plates that are sandwiches with insulation in between.
Yes.
Well, it seemed several of the interior tiles have fallen down about in a row of four, and there's a leak now coming in from the roof. So we suspect that the rubber membrane
has a hole.
Now, that's been guaranteed by the people that put it on, and we're in contact with them. But my question is, how likely is it that this rubber membrane was ripped by the ice forming on the roof? And is it likely that there might be other parts of the roof that would suffer the same fate? We're going to start replacing the roof.
Yeah, I know. If I remember correctly, and I would love to have this conversation off the air with you just so we could talk more length. But one of the things I'm saying is that, because this is going to be a little bit more detailed, and that's part of the support we give when we do our inspection, we'll talk forever. Anyway, but as far as the could it be, how would you protect it? And there are materials that they put on roofs, like for walking on them, not that you would really, this roof is not great for walking, if I remember correctly, that could protect it from people walking on it, from things falling off of trees, ice, and so on. The problem, if I remember correctly, with your roof also is you had a major ponding problem. Is that there were major puddles, and that could cause problems because when the ice freezes and expands, it can rip the material.
And also what it does is when the ice freezes on a roof, it makes the roofing material very brittle, and the weight of the water and the wind blowing can deflect that roof and crack the roofing membrane that you have down.
Thank you so much for calling us,
Steve.
But Steve, do call me at the office.
And we go now to Karen from Brooklyn. A lot of calls from Brooklyn. Hi, Karen.
I guess there are a lot of home problems in Brooklyn.
No, it's just that you people are more articulate, that's all.
That's chauvinism.
Well, I'm from Brooklyn, too. What do you want from my life? Go on.
Well, my household has a moth problem, a double moth problem. We have moths eating all of our wool and cotton clothing, and we also have moths in the kitchen eating our oatmeal.
Okay, so you have a moth infestation, basically.
Yeah, they're
and do you know where they're? Do you have any idea where they're coming from, or they're just? Have you seen cocoons anywhere, or so on?
Oh, no. We've had this problem for years, is the thing.
Well, in other words, the idea is to know where the larvae is starting to accumulate, and this is a major thing, and also where these moths are laying their eggs, and it is best to call in a good exterminator that has a background in entomology. And a good place to get some better information than we can give you is probably the Museum of Natural History. They have a great entomology department. I use them all the time when I want to find out some information that is somewhat esoteric. So that's a good source for a lot of people when you have a problem such as that you described.
But I would go with some of the age-old remedies, which is mothballs,
camphor balls.
Yeah, camphor balls and things like that in the areas where you're having the most problem. Let's deal with it that way. Yes, I know clothes don't smell so good, but it definitely takes care of the larvae problem.
And the oatmeal will smell of camphor, but what the heck. Mm-hmm. Ellie from Brooklyn.
Yes, how you doing?
Well, Brooklyn.
Yes, I'm in Gowanus, around you know, the Arabs in Park Slope and Kell Gardens.
So okay.
I'm almost on the canal there.
Okay.
And I live in one of those rear houses that's located right behind the you know, brownstone, like a three-story building.
Like the old carriage house, actually.
Exactly, the old carriage house. Yeah, it's been converted a few times already. But interesting, you know, I have my own heating pilot. Well, heating pilot, the heater and the boiler for water.
Right.
And the pilot for the heat constantly goes out.
Okay.
So the key span has been here, and the landlord has, you know, has been here. So if everybody says this, that landlord says that the key span is not delivering enough power here. There's the pressure of the gas
Is
not strong enough or something like that.
The reason the pilot light goes out is for only a few reasons. First of all, the pilot orifice is either filled with dirt, or the air-gas ratio has been adjusted improperly, and it's carbonizing, and or there is a too great of a vacuum on the stack that goes up the chimney, and it's actually blowing out the pilot.
Like,
light.
Is there a diverter on it? And do you have see that all gas units have to have a diverter, and that's the hood that's over the unit, or sometimes it's an opening on the pipe. But also in that process, do you also have area in that cellar to get air to the unit? Because you have to have some air to make up to come through that diverter. So I would look at those three things: the pilot itself, the pilot adjustment, and also if there's a diverter there. And those are the things I'd look at first. Keyspan supplies enough gas.
And usually the gas company has a device that they can put into the unit to see if the vacuum of the chimney is too severe for the diverter.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for calling us, Ellie. I think we have time to sneak in one more caller. And also from Brooklyn, Donna. Hi, Donna.
Oh, hi. I live in an 1870s brownstone.
Okay.
And there's a problem right there.
But go on.
The main staircase from the parlor floor up to the third floor that curves around is very creaky. But I've lived in the house for 30 years, and it's always been creaky. And I'm wondering if this is dangerous, if we should have it fixed, or if, you know, if we don't mind the creaking.
Well, can I ask, is this a talcum powder solution?
Yes and no. First of all, is the stairs level, perfectly level?
I don't know.
In other words, when you walk up, you're not working on a slant with 1 foot
down. No.
And do you feel anything that's loose underneath your feet?
Not really.
All right. Talcum powder.
You should say Lenny's. You're supposed to go. Okay, Lenny, what's the answer?
I forgot.
Yeah.
No, you put talcum powder in all of the cracks, and that'll insulate it.
Yeah.
Lubricate it.
Lubricate it. In other words, you just have to take talcum powder, put it in the cracks, take a broom, sweep it around, make sure that it goes into the cracks, and in about a week or so, the squeaks will disappear.
Now, a listener is concerned that the camphor balls will poison the food.
I didn't say put in the food. I said put the clothes.
Yeah.
I didn't say clothes. I want put in the
it's No, but I mean, you could put it outside of the food, couldn't you?
No, I didn't know we were putting it with food.
Okay.
I'm just putting it with
that
the
That was my fault.
I'm putting it with the overcoats, and I'm putting it with the dresses, and I'm putting it with the underwear.
Okay.
Okay. I'm putting it with the oatmeal. You're putting it with the oatmeal.
Before you write any more angry
Yeah, really. I don't remember saying that.
Listen, we've run out of time. You do invite people to write to you. What Larry@ubell.com.
Do not send it here to you.
And Ubell is spelled UBELL.
Yes.
And also include a phone number so that Larry can call you back.
Phone numbers are preferred than return email addresses.
Yes. And we'll.
And wait. And you're going to be back on the second Wednesday of February. I don't know the exact date, but it's usually the second Wednesday.
Right.
That's the 15th, I'm told. The 13th. I'm sorry. Wednesday the 13th.
Okay.
I don't know if that's unlucky. And now it's time to say what you'll be doing
at that
time.
We'll be back again, where we show all of America how to go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.
And this is, and we still have 9 seconds to kill. Oh, well, thank you so much, guys, for being with us. Blah, 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 blah. NPR's Daniel Schorr has covered politics through the administrations of 12 presidents. And he'll be on my show tomorrow to talk about the changes he's seen. Then, on our latest States of the Union, we will look at the issues that matter in Michigan, which has more electoral votes than Iowa and New Hampshire combined. Also, Jeffrey Eugenides on a new collection of love stories, plus our latest underreported. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Sarah English, Scott Goldberg, and Blakeney Schick. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Barbara Kahn, Paula Crossfield, Dina Mann, and Stephen Valentino. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. We'll see you tomorrow.